Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link. Joining us today at the, I don't want to say joining us today at the round table of dimmed lighting anymore because.
Oh, you said dimmed?
Isn't that what it is?
We talked about this before.
I'm sorry. Look, all I don't want to say either one of those things.
It's dim lighting.
I don't want to say dimmed lighting because that's wrong. I'm admitting that right up top.
Because wow, that never happens.
We've got too much good stuff written on the sheet of paper that we just jotted down that we want to talk about to get sidetracked about stupid stuff that we could normally riff on, okay? So I'm just gonna say I was wrong. I'm also gonna say, I'm not gonna say joining us today at the round table of dim lighting because we're here. We're joining each other.
Now you've said it.
And we don't need to unexplain that.
You've explained
each other.
It.
We're here, doing this.
You've explained it multiple times now.
I'm very happy to be here with you by my side, Rhett.
Oh, really? Likewise,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it's touch and go these days, as will become clear with your
yeah, it is.
With your vocal box. Let's see about that. But lots before, to catch up
before
on.
Before we get into the details of not only my medical situation, which is, you know, our medical situations have become sort of a theme of our lives, something about almost turning 40, but we'll talk about that. We're
going to
talk about what we did today, which was very exciting and amusing.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk about a recent trip to the New York City.
We got to catch you up on all of this stuff, and it's going to be a roller coaster ride of retro enactment. We're going to reenact
some
stuff.
Spoiler alert. Teaser. But first, we do want to let you know. Very important. Those of you who live in New York City. Or Los Angeles.
I live in Los Angeles.
We have added two shows, one in New York, one in LA, to the Tour of Mythicality, matinee shows on the same days that we already have New York and LA shows.
Because they were sold out, but now if you want to see us in one of these two places,
yes.
tourofmythicality.com, they go on sale Friday the 11th of August.
But if you are a subscriber to the Mythical Monthly newsletter, which you can do at mythicalmonthly.com, you will get very soon, probably by the time you listen to this, you'll already have it, a special code, an early access code, so you can purchase the tickets early. So
that's one of the many things you get when you are a mythical beastly subscriber to the Mythical Monthly newsletter,
yes.
Is perks of the firstness.
Yeah, so new shows, New York, LA, they're gonna sell quickly if the first shows were any indication, so go over to Mythical Monthly to sign up for the newsletter. Go to tourmythicality.com to get the ticks. Don't get ticks, nobody wants ticks.
Or lice,
carries,
for that matter.
Carry lots of disease. They keep finding new ticks with new diseases.
Man.
Very disheartening. Really, it really is.
Good on ticks though, you know? Good for them.
I don't believe in, I mean, my moral obligation is to humans first.
Well, I didn't say that out of a moral obligation. I said it because you know what? They're doing their thing, man.
They're just doing what they need to do to survive.
You gotta recognize that they're working hard at their thing and it's working.
But do they really need to spread disease to live a fulfilled life?
Apparently so.
I don't know, I think there's some sort of nature mess up happening.
As long as they don't hurt anybody, I'm fine with it.
They hurt a lot of people.
Good point. I'm not fine with it.
Yeah, we should be anti-ticks.
I hate ticks.
I know you gotta be very careful what you're for and against.
Right, I'm nervous I'm nervous now that we're taking a stance about ticks.
If anytime you take in 2017, when you take a stand about anything, you offend somebody, we have offended all tick lovers.
It's gonna bite you in the butt.
Yeah.
And incidentally, I've had members of my family who've been tick bitten on the butt.
Oh man, growing up,
One guy died.
What? The tick or the person?
It was a spider. But he did die.
You had a relative die and got bit by a spider.
Yeah, it was in. Yeah, he sat down on the outhouse toilet, and a spider bit him on the butt, and he died from it. A tick was not involved. Why are we discussing it?
Are you sure that he died from the spider bite, or just complications that arose?
Well, he didn't die immediately. He didn't like. Yeah, he died from complications of whatever a spider bite gives you, man.
What year was this?
Don't fact check me. He was in an outhouse.
So it was a long time ago, before your time. It's just like it's a story that it lives in your family.
My nanny's side of the family, Lucille. Because one day when I was a kid, I was like, tell me about the last words of my relatives.
What?
I remember sparking conversation with my nanny and I said, tell me about the last words of my relatives.
Very morbid thought from a child.
And she said, well, you had one so-and-so member of our family who bit by a spider on the butt in the outhouse and he died. I was like, what did he say? He's like, if you gotta go, you gotta go. Get it?
Did he really say that? Or was no. That was a joke that Nanny made.
It was a joke that I just made up. I don't remember what she told me.
Oh, you just made that up on the spot right now?
I was pretty proud of myself, but then you didn't laugh.
Well, I was thinking like—
Why aren't you laughing?
Did Nanny—
Are you holding back for some reason?
Yeah, I won't be laughing a lot.
Let's get to that, because I want the people to know why you didn't laugh at my amazing joke. When you gotta go, you gotta go. Double meaning.
I'm not laughing because I'm reserving my voice.
You can probably tell.
You can probably tell
I
sound a little bit different. There's not as much resonance in my voice as normal.
You actually sound sad. I want the people to know that you're not sad.
I'm not sad. I am concerned, which we will talk about. I don't want
He is sad.
I don't want you to be overly concerned. But if you remember from last week when we were talking to Steve Pink, friend and collaborator, director on Buddy System Season 2, I had to step out. I had to abruptly end the podcast because I needed to get to my ENT appointment.
Ear, nose, and throat it.
So I don't know how much of this I explained before, but the long story short is, you know, for like the past, like the last month of Buddy System, I kind of had a on again, off again, cold, like sore throat that I just kind of chalked up to stressed out, working too much, not sleeping enough.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, I've got some cold, I can't shake it because I'm not getting, you know, rest and whatever. And also—
Your immune system is weak because you're working.
Right, but also in the—
Trying to keep up with me.
Like 3.5 weeks or so into this sort of mild sore throat, you know, in the last week of shooting, well, first of all, there's a lot of yelling. I did think about the fact that there was a lot of yelling this season. There was like, oh, stick your feet in this bucket and yell.
Open this door.
Look at this little girl and yell.
Yeah, in unison.
I'm gonna tell you right now, no more yelling in Buddy System.
You're gonna
it all happened.
You're gonna do like a find and replace on every script rewrite for the word yell. And you're gonna replace the word yell with whisper gently.
I actually thought about this.
Whisper gently and look sad.
From now on, when we have to yell in a narrative project, we're gonna have to get
designated
ADR. It's going to be somebody else who
designated
sounds like me.
Pinch yeller.
And all I'm gonna do is just open my mouth.
Well, it's funny because we had that scene where we opened the door and we're supposed to yell at this girl. And we rehearsed it and we told her, because she's pretty young, we didn't want to frighten her. We were like, we're gonna yell in your face really loud. But then when we rehearsed it, we were like, but first we're going to just act like we're yelling, but no sound is gonna come out of our throats. Sure. We actually told her that.
Wish I had stayed there.
You should have stayed there.
Yeah.
Cause I was yelling enough for the both of us. And coincidentally, I'm still fine, I'm great.
Yeah, and I think based on some limited reading that I've done.
Limited, huh?
So I went to the doctor. What I thought had happened is, okay, I kind of kicked myself when I was down, like you got compromised, you know, drainage and stuff happening in your throat, and then you strain your voice by yelling, and I kind of like sent myself into a little bit of a tailspin, and I haven't been able to really rest my voice. And then today we were out with the team, we'll talk about that, and it was outside, there's a lot of people, so I'm talking, so now you can kind of hear that I'm hoarse. And this is what's been happening every day. I've been waking up and feeling fine, like a mild sore throat, and then by the end of the day, I feel like my voice is kind of strained. So I went to the doctor, and I went to the doctor right after last week, after the podcast, right before we left for New York, because I was like, if I'm gonna have to be on some kind of like vocal rest or something like that, if there's like a node or something on my vocal cords, if I've strained them, I need to know what to do so I don't make the problem worse.
And you want things to get better. If things can get better quickly by going to the doctor before we go on Fallon and Ryan and Kelly, you'd like to actually be able to talk when we go on these shows.
Right.
So, went to the doctor and what talk. Did he, what happened?
Well, it was an odd doctor's appointment. I've told you this, but I will tell you this now.
But I wasn't listening, so I tell me
okay,
again.
Okay, yeah, just listen this time then. So I had to go about an hour away from here in order to get an appointment because it was so last minute.
Which I will point out that if I did listen, I could tell the story and then you could save your voice.
Mm, too late for that.
Mm.
And so I had to drive an hour. I go to this doctor and I kind of noticed that the girl behind the counter who was kind of checking me in, but also another girl, we were acting a little strange when I checked in. And
like a cult?
No, like, and this is, it sounds pretentious and cause this has happened a few times now. Now that it is not uncommon for us, for one of us to be recognized when we're in public because of people seeing the show.
Our unending fame.
Sometimes someone looks at you funny or says something in a weird way, and just because we are selfish, self-absorbed people, we tend to think, oh, she must know who I am. And then there are some times where it turns out that is true, and other times it's like, oh no, she doesn't have any idea who I am. That was a very
weird,
self-centered thing to think because I'm an egomaniac, you know? Just like everybody is.
Well, I'm not. I think that when it happens enough that it turns out that people have recognized me. I know what that look looks like and I recognize it.
But sometimes you're mistaken. Sometimes you're mistaken.
Yes, but I don't think that makes me an egomaniac.
Well, I'm just saying we're all egomaniacs. We're all very self-focused.
I'm just trying to get out of the bucket with you.
But they didn't
but
say anything.
You're hedging, but you felt the same way about this receptionist.
Yeah, but it was weird because they weren't really looking me in the eye, and it was just a little strange. I was like, what's going on? And then another woman.
But you thought maybe she recognizes me.
I didn't say anything. Then another woman comes out, and she's like an older woman who is like in a pantsuit.
Great.
She looks like some kind of like, she's like the office manager or something like that. She's not one of the nurses. She's not in scrubs. She says.
And that's why you said pantsuit. You didn't say something, you weren't being sexist.
No, because she had on a pantsuit.
Instead of scrubs.
Yeah, and she's like, Rhett? And I had just gotten my paperwork, I hadn't even gone through it. Rhett, please come on back. And so I go back there and she's like, well, the girls in the back are really excited. And so I'm like, oh, okay, they do know who I am. And now feel a little awkward, right? Because what am I supposed to say? And I said something like, great.
So for a second you weren't an egomaniac, but then you said great and you became one again?
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm just trying to play it down because I'm not looking
it
for-
It is awkward, yeah.
I'm not looking for special treatment, you know? I want normal treatment.
You just want medical treatment.
Yeah, right. And so then
the girls in the back were pretty, what?
Pretty excited.
That's what
I don't know
said.
What they thought I was gonna
she's
do for
making
them.
Making it weird.
I mean, I'm just there to have my throat looked at. So I go and sit down
what do you say?
Exam room. Oh. I said great. So
great.
I sit down in the exam room and then she's like one of our nurses or, you know, who comes in before the doctor? Is that a nurse?
It's a mystery to me.
So about 10 minutes later, knock on the door, I'm done with my paperwork. A young girl, 25 years old, comes in and she looks at me and she's got this kind of smile on her face and her face is getting a little bit red. And she just like smiled at me and I kind of smiled back to her. And then she sits down at the computer where she's gonna like take her notes for my like pre-interview before the doctor comes in. And she's like, I'm so nervous. And she gets up and walks out.
That's all she said and she walked out?
All she said. She said, oh, I'm so nervous. And then she walked out and I was like, well, golly, I'm sitting here thinking, you know me, we'll talk about this. I'm a hypochondriac. I've talked about it before, but
yeah, you're pretty concerned going in here.
I go through. Okay, I've got throat cancer. I've got thyroid. You know, it's all I got. I think I've got everything, and I've got some sort of throat thing, and I'm going to have to be on vocal rest for weeks, and it's going to change our fall. And I'm
very worried, if not concerned.
Yeah, and so she's not helping by saying I'm nervous and just walking out, giggling. And so then I wait like 15 minutes.
Oh.
And then she comes back in with the doctor. So she couldn't even come in by herself. So she's got to come back in with the doctor. She's still got the same smile on her face. And
it's flattering, but it's not a good time.
But at this point, something interesting happened because I could tell that the doctor, as is not unusual, has no idea who I am, but knows that his girls know who I am and are excited about me being there. And so there was an interesting dynamic there.
Uh-huh.
Because
you could tell when
he walked. I could sense it.
Did he walk in with a swagger?
He kind of had a little bit of like, who's this big shot? You know what I'm saying? And then he says.
You got this vibe from him.
Yeah, I did. He's like, okay, what's going on? And I said, well, you know, I've been working a lot this summer. Been on doing 12-hour days on set, you know. And he was like, 12-hour days. Welcome to the club.
Oh, he's
yeah.
He's asserting his power.
Yeah, and of course I'm just sitting.
He's marking his territory or something.
Yeah. He didn't pee all over it. I thought he might for a second,
but
he did not urinate on me or her or any instruments.
Good God. Which is they do teach that in medical school.
Yeah, if things get desperate, you got to break it out. You got to whip it out and pee on stuff.
No, you can either sterilize your instruments with an autoclave, or you can urinate upon them.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh my goodness! So he was basically, you just saw the psychology written all over his face because. Especially when he says that.
Right, like, but well, I could have been reading some things into it.
He's like putting you in your place.
But he was very professional, very nice guy. But then it got a little bit embarrassing from that point because,
oh, good.
First of all, I was thrown off my game with the dynamics of what was happening. But what I wanted was, I wanted that throat scope thing that you had done when we went to the plastic surgeon's office. Not that we're getting plastic surgery. We made a commercial for a plastic surgeon in Newport Beach years ago.
And just to get the lay of the land,
we
found out that he had a scope they could send down and get video footage of your vocal cords while you talked. And not knowing what that entailed, I was like, let's do it. And he was like, and I was like, no, let's do it.
Yeah.
And then he numbed my throat and shoved a camera all the way down in there, and it's in that.
The making of a
plastic surgeon.
Well, that's what
which is still on our channel.
That's what I wanted done.
If you want to see my vocal cords move, and you wanted this.
Yeah, but what he did, he was like, "Okay, open your mouth, say."
Because you were convinced that you had a node or something nasty on your vocal cords.
I've never had this particular situation,
You want confirmation that you don't have the worst case scenario in that moment.
So what he does is he looks at the back of my throat and he's like. You got inflammation, drainage. You got inflammation from drainage. And then—
Welcome to the club.
Then he takes his little mirror, you know, like a dentist mirror, like you can stick in and see different parts of the mouth. He's like, say ah, and then he sticks that mirror back into the back of my throat so he can see down my throat. So not using the scope, but using the mirror. And I have a crazy gag reflex. So like he gets it close to the back and I start going, and it's embarrassing because I've got this fan in the room.
You got a fan. The fan club. You know, the rest of the fan club is gathered choking, outside of the door.
I'm choking like an idiot. And then I'm like, sorry, I got a bad gag reflex. He's like, okay, just breathe like this. He's like, he's getting me breathing like a pregnant woman. And then he goes
Another power play, by the way.
And
this has no medical.
Right, he's just doing this for fun. But he got a couple of seconds before I choked him right out of my mouth again. And he was like, yep, it's inflamed. And here's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna prescribe 4 medications.
Oh, wow.
It's like, I'm gonna give you an antibiotic. I'm gonna give you an oral steroid. I'm gonna give you a nasal steroid. And I'm gonna give you like Mucinex, basically.
But you were thinking, I want the scope. I want definitive. I want a diagnosis or a clean prognosis.
Yeah.
I want something definitive. I don't want just like a little gag and mirror action.
Well, because first
and
of
then
all,
a lot of medication.
I'm very much antibiotics. I don't like antibiotics unless I have an infection. So I delayed.
So you're probiotic.
Yeah, So I delayed the start of the antibiotics until things didn't get better, and I was like, because he was like. Because I could kind of feel like, again, this could be where my hypochondriac comes in, but I can like feel like some chest tightness and like, oh, I kind of feel like maybe it's moving into my lungs. Like I start, and I don't know if that's in my head if it's psychosomatic or if it's legitimate, like, oh, this is gonna turn into bronchitis, I should take the antibiotic. I never take antibiotics. It's okay to do it once. I'll do a probiotic at the same time I'm doing the antibiotic, which I have been doing.
Are you saying this stuff out loud to Jessie? Because—
oh yeah, I talk to her about it all the time, drive her nuts.
Oh my goodness. That's horrible.
And then I also delayed the steroid because it's like makes you susceptible to infection. But then yesterday I started the steroid. Long story short, I've now basically done all four medications that he has prescribed. And I feel exactly the same. Like,
well, that's because all of them were just to express his dominance over you to the rest of his staff.
We're not gonna get anybody in trouble. I think he did what he usually does when he sees somebody who's in my condition.
He just did it with a little more swagger.
It knocks it out. But unfortunately, I still have something going on with the throat. So I feel fine, I don't feel sick, don't have like swollen lymph nodes or a headache or whatever. Basically, I wake up every morning and I feel fine.
You're talking to yourself right now, by the way.
This
is self-talk to make himself feel better.
Well, I don't feel good. As I talk throughout the day, and if it's a day like today where there's a lot of talking, by the end of the day, I feel like I sound a little bit hoarse. Just a little bit hoarse. I'm also talking a little softer because if I talk at a high level, there's this like kind of sharp pain that then makes it feel like my voice is about to crack. Breathe.
And then
you don't have a mirror.
Hold your arms like a—
I'm not gonna do that.
Like a begging puppy dog.
Now you're just trying to embarrass me.
Okay.
So, and of course I get Hadil, our assistant, she's gotta worry about all this medical stuff too. Okay. She's made multiple proctology appointments for us and she calls the doctor. And then the doctor, I'm like, okay, well, he's got an office over the hill and he's got an office way up north. And it's like, well, he's got one type of scope at one place. So I'm basically, I need a follow-up appointment because we got a lot of things coming up. As you know, we got a pretty big fall. We got some things that
were many involve you speaking.
My voice is kind of an important part of this whole thing. And so I'm thinking worst case scenario. I'm like, oh, I've got a nodule. I've got something wrong.
As long as we're clear that your looks have nothing to do with it, then I'm on board.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My looks have nothing to do with what?
Anything. It's just your voice. Then I'm cool with this.
What about your looks?
That's pretty important.
Okay.
It's all important. It all works together.
I didn't know that's how it worked. I thought the older ladies like me and the younger ladies looked like you and I thought that we were good. That was my understanding.
All you gotta do is be able to talk, man. So just focus on, don't lose that.
Yeah, so I'm worried about our plans. And so, you know, you like start reading, it's like, well, you're gonna have this vocal fold thing that requires a month of vocal rest and maybe surgery and all this. I'm like, oh gosh, all this stuff we've got planned. And then stress, you know, I think a lot of this is stress induced. I'm making it worse. So anyway,
I'm making it worse? I actually don't know what to do. I don't know what to do to help you, so I just make light of it.
You can't help me. I mean, I'm going back to the doctor. I'm going back to the doctor on Tuesday of next week, and I'm going to the office where he's got the thing that is like the—
A different doctor.
No, same doctor.
Oh, same doctor? The one that you've been talking trash about this whole time? You're going back to him?
Yeah, I think he's a good doctor.
What's his name?
I'm not gonna say that.
Oh, why not?
And he's gonna use the proper scope to get in there and get the— you hear that scope? You see that happened? That's what's happening.
You're okay, man.
And so I'm going to that appointment, and then hopefully what he's gonna say is, oh, it's gonna go away on its own. And then worst case scenario is like, you're gonna die. I don't think that's gonna happen. He probably wouldn't say
you're gonna die, and it's starting in the throat.
But really, worst case scenario, I think, is like, okay, you need to let your voice rest for X amount of days in order for this condition to go away, because you really haven't let it rest. And then the question is, well, how long do you have to let it rest? And what does that do about when GMM comes back, et cetera, et cetera?
Well,
you know, that's what I start thinking about.
Just don't bring me into it. You're making me nervous now, is all I'm saying. You're making me nervous.
Okay. Well, I don't want you to be nervous. Everything's gonna be okay.
He's gonna be fine.
I know I'm gonna be fine.
There's a direct correlation with how much he reads and how bad he feels. I'm just gonna put it that way.
Oh yeah, I mean, I definitely make it worse. I don't necessarily
you're
think
be
that,
great.
That I manifest it, but I do believe that like with the back problems that I've had, I do believe that there's a big part of it that I've manifested the problems. So I do think that it's possible for me to manifest some sort of throat thing because my back's good now. Mm. And so then I'm like, oh, I gotta find something else to
well,
go wrong.
Let's hope that's right. But I think something immediately that is gonna make you feel better is changing the subject to the wonderful experience we had today.
Yes.
And in New York City, and show some love to our sponsor, MeUndies. August is National Underwear Month. I don't know who comes up with this, but it's true. And to celebrate, MeUndies is making it easier than ever for you, Mythical Beast, to try the world's most comfortable underwear by giving you a risk-free guarantee all National Underwear Month long. If you don't love your MeUndies, they are free.
And you should take advantage of this opportunity because you are going to love your MeUndies because we have been wearing them for a long time now and wearing them today. And we love them. And we like them because micromodal is what they're made out of. And that's an all natural, breathable, eco-friendly fabric extruded from Austrian beech trees.
That sounds crazy.
And they actually inhibit odor. And I gotta say, I'm gonna get a little personal here because we've been out today, we'll tell you about this in a second, but we've been out today in 100 degree weather all day.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, Link.
Is there a swampy situation happening?
There is no swamp gas situation happening down there. It's breathable, the odor has been inhibited, I'm still totally comfortable. Other parts of my body are not comfortable. You know, my pits are a little sticky, my face feels a little bit, glisteny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the place I'm talking about that is covered by the underwear is in very good shape thanks to MeUndies.
And they're very comfortable the way that they're built. MeUndies has a diamond seamed pouch that cradles your jewels. I don't know who comes up with this stuff, but it's true. And it gives your stuff the support it needs without feeling too tight.
Right.
So.
This underwear, that's what it does. That's what it should do.
It's the perfect. It's tight in the right places and loose in the right places.
It is. It's like magic.
It's something about diamond seamed pouch, I would like to say again.
You gotta try them for yourself. And now until August 31st, you get 20% off your first pair plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/ear. That's MeUndies.com/ear. MeUndies.com/ear. Now, back to the biscuit.
I don't know if you can tell by the
shimmer?
Residual shimmer on our faces that we spent the day at an amusement park.
Oh, yeah,
or by just the natural glow of amusement which is coming from our face if you're watching this or even if you're just listening to it. Can you hear residual sound waves of amusement from spending a day at the amusement park?
They probably can't, but
especially because we may not be exuding those. I think let's analyze.
Well, it was 100 degrees out there. We went to Six Flags
over Georgia.
Over Georgia. I was gonna say the same thing.
Well, I think there is one in Georgia.
There is.
Six Flags.
We went to Six Flags in Magic Mountain in Santa Clarita, where it's approximately 10 degrees warmer than it is here. So it was 101 degrees. We took the whole team, which now requires a full-size bus. Did you see that bus we were in?
Yeah.
Did you look check that bus out?
Yeah, my eyes were open when I got in the bus. I saw it.
Like.
Good God
gracious.
In it.
I actually said out loud, this is what this has become. Mythical Entertainment requires a big old bus. That's something to be proud of.
Yeah, and then you started to feel a little egomaniacal.
Yeah, right, then I was like, oh.
Like that doctor's office thing. I think that's your real problem. You need to be seeing a different kind of doctor.
I'm still reading that book, Ego is the Enemy. I need to read it more, I guess.
So we get there. With the team in tow, because we came back, not as many people came back. I don't know if heat strokes happened or some people drove in cars.
Did we leave some people?
I think Eddie was wearing jeans.
Yeah, that was a
mistake. I think he and Ben, they went back a different way.
Yeah.
I was thinking, I knew it was gonna be hot out there because I've been to Santa Clarita before and it was literally 110 degrees. I'm like, man, we're going there. And I looked on that, is it gonna be crowded? Is it packed?
But it wasn't 100. It wasn't 110 today.
And though. It was
100.
100. And so, I started thinking, what am I going to wear? I got to wear shorts. oh my gosh, and I gotta wear the right kind of shoes. Uh-huh. And I gotta pack a pack. I noticed that you asked me about my pack. I was like, I put a lot of thought in my pack.
Well, what was in it?
A big water bottle with ice and water, and it had like a straw. It was the biggest one we got. I was like, I might bring a second. I didn't, but I was like, I gotta stay hydrated. You know me. I gotta stay hydrated. Gotta keep that voice going.
But they had they had water at the park also. I mean,
yeah, you either have to purchase it or you get it from water fountains, which I knew I would still have to go to the water fountain, but I would fill up a container. Cause here's what happens. The whole thing is a survival situation. It's 100 degrees out there. It felt post-apocalyptic, man. It's like, there weren't that many people and it was just like reptilian roller coasters everywhere and people serving hot dogs and then just lifeless people crawling from thing to thing.
It wasn't that bad.
It's like a deserted wasteland of amusement, and you get yourself in a line. Brother, don't get thirsty in a line, because no one's going to turn around and, oh, here, sir, have a hydrating beverage. No, you're on your own until you get off of this ride, which
but there are many places to get waters.
Not when you're in a line, man. You could be in a line for hours.
But I got a bottle of water, and
there's also pain reliever in my pack.
Okay, well, okay.
When I'm still dehydrated for some reason and I get a headache, there's lip balm, which of course
gotta have that.
I not only manufacture, but I keep on my person at all times. To keep the lips hydrated, that's an important part.
Yeah, I think personally, I believe you've become dependent on it, but I don't mind because we sell it.
I had sunglasses. I wore contacts because if I had to take my, I don't want to have to switch between glasses and sunglasses when I go from like an indoor line to an outdoor roller coaster. So I wore contacts, and then I wore.
You need to get transition lenses, man.
Sunglasses. I think there's safety concerns with those because in the moment of transition, which turns out to be a couple of minutes, I think.
No, I think it's like 30 seconds.
Even seconds, 30 seconds, you can run into a lot of wall in 30 seconds.
But you look so
trying
cool.
Trying to crawl out of
you look so cool for 30 seconds when you walk in. It's like, that dude wears his sunglasses inside. And you're like, no, wait, they're transition lenses.
You walk into a freaking like dark place and you have to freeze there until it transitions. Yeah. So it's like you walk in and stand
and collect yourself. I think it's great.
People are piling up behind you trying to get into the establishment and you're just trying to see.
Let me tell you right now.
And then you walk back outside.
That I need glasses, they will be transition lenses. Because I've thought about this quite a bit.
Oh, you think you thought about this more than me? I had contact lenses. I had sunglasses. I had another pair of sunglasses that were also not prescription in case the first sunglasses I was wearing proved to be uncomfortable halfway through the day. I had my sunglasses.
How could they prove to be uncomfortable?
Because sometimes the way they sit on my face, it hurts certain places where they sit if I don't wear them every day. These glasses, which I don't wear that often, are very comfortable. These are my night glasses. I wear these when I go home because if I wear my day glasses, which are the glasses that I'm known for, at night, by the time I get home, they start to push in certain places that I need new glasses that push in different places. So when I get home, I put on my night glasses, which I'm wearing right now because it's night, and I packed these to go with me today in case I needed to abandon the contact lenses because they would be uncomfortable. So I packed these glasses, and then I also packed my prescription sunglasses. So in my pack,
Now I see why you needed a pack.
I had two pairs of non-prescription sunglasses. I didn't realize how crazy this was. I didn't add it up. A third pair of prescription sunglasses, a pair of prescription glasses. And then you and Stevie at one point put your glasses in my pack. When you were asking me, can I put my glasses in your pack before we go on this roller coaster? You notice I got kind of stressed.
Yeah, it was very weird.
Well, because that would be six pairs of glasses in my pack and I didn't know if my pack could take it. I didn't know what would happen to all those glasses.
Now that I see the level of, I'm very familiar with
you. I also thought about bringing a hoodie.
That would have been inappropriate.
I literally thought for a second.
It might get cold, get chilly.
In the shade, even if it's 100 degrees, sometimes in the shade, it can get kind of chilly.
Now.
I didn't.
I've known this about you for a long time. We've talked about it. You have a different sensitivity level to these things. lots of differences between me and you. One of the differences.
I didn't pack a pack for you.
Is right. I took it, you know, I'm thankful that you brought a pack. I used your pack.
You did. I was like your dad.
I used your pack for one ride. I put my hat, even though I specifically said, you know what? I can just leave my hat out on the shelf.
Didn't.
And then Stevie was like, your hat may get stolen. I was so like, okay, I'll put it in Link's pack.
Along with Stevie's cowboy hat.
Yeah, right. She had her big Stetson in there.
I don't know how she crammed it in there.
It got bent a little bit because when I took it out and gave it to her, it was a little bent. But I just don't have those sensitivities, so I don't need the pack.
I felt like I was entering a survival situation, and I was, and I made it because of the pack. Made it because of my
but
pack.
But I'm just a little bit
where would your hat have
worried
gone?
For you when you are in an actual post-apocalyptic survival situation. Because you were at Six Flags, not over Georgia, but Santa Clarita. It was actually, I mean, all my needs were met. I appreciate you meeting the need of putting my hat in your bag.
But the moment.
I was very hydrated because what I would do is when I saw a place that was selling water, which now, okay, you saved money.
You bought water.
You saved money.
You supported an industry of bottled water, which is, that's negligent.
But I just got a big thing of water and I drank the whole thing. I was fully hydrated. I peed multiple times today. I sweated a lot. You know, mark my territory around Six Flags over Georgia.
I literally peed twice all day and I drank constantly.
I peed three times.
I don't know how I did it.
You sweated it out.
But I did know, Tis, that at the beginning, I didn't know.
You didn't notice.
I didn't notice when we were getting on that bus before we left the studio that you said, you turned to me, saw my pack and you said, you have a pack.
I was interested in what you might have in there.
And then I said, other people have packs. And then you dropped it, which is good. We learned not to push each other's buttons when we're having a fun day. So you're to be commended for stepping back from the button.
But I was genuinely interested. You have a pack. I'm like, well, what's in the pack?
I could see it in your eyes. It was judgment.
I did, yeah, but that doesn't matter. I could be judging the fact that you have a pack, but I'm also just asking what's in your pack. And so you can choose to be defensive or you can just choose to be like, well, I've got seven pairs of glasses.
Well, I just
four,
was.
Four but levels of pH different waters for you, different points of the day. Almost put a hoodie in there, but now there's a windbreaker.
The main reason we do ear biscuits, I think is becoming very clear right now. This is a safe place for having a discussion that if we had the exact same starting point that of this discussion, on that bus at that moment, it would have ended in a fight, not in entertainment.
But it wouldn't.
It would have.
No, but if
I'm not saying you'd be. It may be my fault.
I would have never meant for it to be a fight. I just wanted it to be a conversation.
No, you didn't. You judged me for having a pack, and I would have been defensive.
And if you judge me for having something, I would be like, I'd give you the, I'd spout the reason off.
You would spout it.
I'd spout the reason off.
You'd spout it.
And I'm just saying, if you feel like I'm judging you by asking you a question, just spout the reason off. And I'd be like, okay, cool. Seven pairs of glasses, I get it.
Yeah, right. But here in the, you know, in the auspices of the dim lighting, we can safely have an entertaining conversation.
But you yourself
and that's why
just
it keeps
admitted
our friendship
that.
Afloat.
But just you yourself just
that's
admitted
why you're talking.
That
even
as
though you shouldn't.
As you describe your own
it's freaking
situation,
ridiculous.
You recognize the ridiculous nature of it.
Just like you recognize
it. Doesn't bother me though.
There's
I took advantage
nothing
of the,
wrong with your throat.
I took advantage of the fact that you had a backpack, which is
nothing
which is great.
Wrong with your throat.
Well, that's just false.
Okay, I know it's false. I was pushing a button, but I'm saying you knew that you were being ridiculous about having hypochondria, having extreme thoughts, jumping to extreme conclusions about what you might have. In this environment, you were saying, you know what? It's entertaining because it's a bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I'm doing the same. We can do that here. That's the beauty of this
table. It's a safe space.
This is a safe space for us to be ourselves and not take ourselves too seriously. But in the front of that bus, we could have had one of those things where the driver had to back away slowly. And I mean without the bus.
But that would have been ridiculous.
It would have
you
been.
You do recognize that would have been ridiculous.
But your fault? No. Yes, yes.
It would have
yes.
been ridiculous.
I'm making fun of us if we, that the fight we didn't have. I'm making fun of that fight we didn't even have.
But let's talk about the fun that we did have at the amusement park. Because,
did we? We split up. Did you have fun? Because like, I know you're so tall and—
Well, I was regaling some stories of my past and the way that I think about roller coasters. And one of the things, the main thing that I'm thinking about when I get on a roller coaster is, am I going to fit on this roller coaster? It, like, because there's like seven different points of contact that could ruin a roller coaster ride for me. The main two being, I don't have enough leg room, so my—
Well, now the throat is one.
Well, yeah, well, I'll explain that in a second, but—
I was just joking.
No, but you're— it is. Explain. Seriously. Oh, yeah, okay. That was an additional thing I was thinking about today.
Oh, go
but
ahead
I'm like,
then.
Are my legs going to be jammed into the car in front of me in a way that makes it uncomfortable and like makes me think that my femur is going to snap when the G-forces get applied?
Ooh.
And then the second thing is, if it's a roller coaster that has a shoulder restraint, they build the shoulder restraints for normal sized people within a certain range, and I'm outside of the normal range. And so, typically a shoulder restraint goes—
You have no business getting on a roller coaster.
A shoulder restraint goes down and then like is parallel to the front side of your body. But
well,
for me—
It's like wearing a onesie. It's the same reason you can't wear a onesie.
But the shoulder restraints come over me and then they're at like a 45 because they don't completely— so I don't feel safe in my— and then if I go too far, like if I pull down too far and it locks into place—
It crunches you.
Now I'm hunched, and now I'm beginning to think about my back, because while my back is doing good right now, historically, I've got all these disc issues with my back, you know? And so now I'm thinking, oh, now I'm in a compromised situation and I can't get my neck back, and I'm gonna be thinking— basically, I'm just thinking, I'm not having any fun.
Yet you ran headlong into it.
Right, because I, you know—
For the team.
What I thought about it today is, I enjoy doing things with people like that. Like, I would never just be like one of those guys that like, amusement park is open, I'm by myself, I can ride any roller coaster. I would just go to the restaurants and eat. Go see the shows, that's what I did. I saw a great show today. It's a great show.
Oh gosh.
You guys were there, that was a great show today.
You drug Cody and Jacob to a show at Six Flags, a place known for nothing but roller coasters.
Uh-huh. Quirk the show in the Gearworks Theater, you should check it out.
I don't wanna hear about it.
So acrobatic. Trampolines, there's a girl on roller skates.
Was it air conditioned?
Very air conditioned. That was the main reason I was there.
Should have been there.
But
I would have just stared at the vent.
But I'm not, but I just don't, the being in fear in that moment, it's like I used to enjoy roller coasters when I was smaller, because there was this like, oh, there's no chance anything's gonna go wrong, and I'm comfortable, and I'm just living on, I'm living on the edge, but I'm totally safe. There's like, it's kind of like watching a horror movie, like you're really scared and you're with friends, but then you know you're safe. Same sensation, that's why I loved it. But then I just got so big, and then I started having these physical problems with my back and stuff, and now I just go, I'm just there for the other people. But today, the third thing that I've never thought about was, I can't yell because of my voice.
Oh.
So I literally just like, just held my mouth open in a screaming posture without making any noise the whole time.
Is that, was that as good?
It wasn't as good, I like to scream.
You gotta scream.
I'd much rather prefer to scream.
On the way there, Lizzie leaned over in the bus and showed me a video on her freaking phone of this recent mishap at the, I don't know if it was the one at the Ohio State Fair, but—
Yeah, the fireball.
Like the fireball, and then a whole section of, I don't know why I watched it.
A person like, died.
I think I told her, show it to me, but I don't know why the words came out of my mouth, because I never would have wanted to see it. And then it was an iPhone video of the thing flailing about and then sending a whole section of it as a projectile, and somebody died.
That was a state fair though. That's not
state
Six Flags.
Fair. They set it up, they take it down, they move on, they don't get dental work.
Right, yeah.
That's what happens.
It's a carny joke. I'd laugh if I could laugh.
Right. Yeah, let's ADR it. Open your mouth more so we can and cross your eyes a little bit.
Okay.
Why did you cross your eyes a little bit?
Because that's
don't do that. That
you
makes
didn't
it,
notice.
That makes it.
I always cross my eyes when I laugh.
It's unconvincing.
I always cross my eyes when I laugh.
It's not. I'm not convinced by it. Don't do it. But do the other part.
But did you have fun?
And ADR of that.
But you
ADR
were,
of that.
You were concerned, but you forgot about that when you got to the park.
I'm a compartmentalist. Like mentalist, like someone who can control their brain.
Yeah, right.
And I can compartmentalize. Mm-hmm. You see what I did there? Yeah. I combined two things into one, and did that make sense? I'm a compartmentalist.
Maybe in your own brain.
That's my superpower. I can forget
all. Well, the word on the street was specifically what was said about you. We were like, where's Lincoln been? And then somebody was like, Lincoln Ben are going hard.
Really?
That was the specific terminology used for you guys.
Eddie seemed to know everything about the place, and right when we got there, he was like, we should go to the Twister Colossal, or what's it called? Colossal Twister. So I was like, oh, you're the guy I'm gonna follow. You're the leader now.
Which is incidentally the roller coaster featured in National Lampoon Vacation. The original,
this is the updated version.
When they go to Wally World.
Feldman told me this too, yeah.
Hold on, no, the new version?
No, the old version.
The old version with Chevy Chase.
It's more intense. No, I'm saying the roller coaster has been updated.
But Wally World is Six Flags.
So be it.
When they pull up to Wally World in the movie, it's the place we went today.
Cool.
You've never seen the movie, have you?
No.
Huh. Well, 98% of you who have seen the movie recognize that's pretty cool.
I know they only made it to the parking lot and then it was closed.
Nope.
Spoiler alert.
No, they get in and he uses a pistol to force his way onto all the rides. Oh.
Sounds like a funny movie.
Yeah, it's very funny.
I should see it.
Yeah.
So I was following Eddie, Ben was there, Mike and Alex were there, and then they disappeared. I literally haven't seen them since. And Ellie, Annie, and Nikki.
You and Ben weren't going hard?
Not any harder than the rest of the people in our party.
But that was,
just got on roller coasters.
I know, but.
But one after another, and I was concerned. I got on the first one. It was rather intense.
The Colossal?
Yeah, you go through it, and then all of a sudden, you're going through it again. It's like riding the same roller coaster twice. Don't know how they did it, but I found myself doing it. So I thought it was over, and then I was like, whoa, we're going around again on a parallel track that's a different color, but we're doing basically the same thing. Pretty cool, unless you're ready to get off. And at that point, I literally said to myself, silently, focus on your breathing, because you don't want to get a headache.
Headache prevention.
Yeah, you might get dehydrated, and if your brain is shaking around in there.
You are panicking about
it. I'm already a little dehydrated, and I was mostly concerned about getting a headache.
But you're not thinking you're not scared that you're gonna, you don't have irrational fears about roller coasters.
It's not like I had just watched a video of people who literally died on an amusement park ride.
Well, I mean, because
I
rode a roller coaster with Lizzie, and she had irrational fears about dying on the roller coaster.
That's why I avoided her the rest of the day, because she has a knack for.
But then at the end, she was like, oh, this is fine.
Decompartmentalizing my fears.
This is fine. That's what she was saying.
She knows no compartments.
That's how she was enjoying this roller coaster. It was like she was freaking out as we were getting on. And she was like, this is a mistake. And then she was like, this is fine. I never heard anybody enjoy a roller coaster. She wasn't going like, woo. She's like, this is fine. This is okay.
Yeah, she was talking to herself. And I was on the other side of the park going hard. I focused on my breathing in order to not get a headache, and then I somehow still got a headache. I think I was dehydrated.
Right, you didn't have enough water.
I don't know.
Should have bought a pack.
Constantly drinking water.
Should have bought an extra water in that pack.
I think I'm addicted to water. I think my body.
There are worse things.
Needs too much of it. It's spoiled.
But then
I'm constantly giving it water.
But then we finished up the day by riding along with Stevie. We rode the what was that called? Tatsu, which unlike anything I've ever experienced before, this is like one of
those.
Was
horizontal.
Hangy down, so like dangly roller coasters. So like if you remember like the Big Bad Wolf from Busch Gardens.
You got an ankle dangle.
But this thing and your ankles are dangling, but you kind of notice that like your shins are like locked in, and then there's like a soft sort of chest plate kind of thing. And this all makes sense because right before the thing takes off, it leans you forward into a flying position. And at that point, I got very concerned because that's when I start thinking about safety. And what I think is a rational fear, because I'm like, okay, it's one thing to have like G-forces push you down into a seat, which is like a part of the track, you know, part of the whole thing. But when all your weight is being put on a restraint that just moments ago was open.
Yeah.
So I know
and you
that
know it opens.
It does open. It is possible to open.
So if it did open now, I'd plop out.
Well, and so
and the plop would take a long time because we were high up in the air.
It is the highest, longest, and fastest, flying roller coaster in the nation, in the world.
It's like if you were in your bedroom and then somebody picked up the house and turned it on its side and you fell out of your bedroom into the front door, which was closed. And then you're soaring through the air, like rocketing away from Earth to some other land. And you know that that door opens all the time. I go in and out of that door all the time. And let's say that the door opens out. Is this analogy working?
No.
Nope.
But I know what you were trying to say.
It's like if you're leaning on a front door, which they usually open out. This is a great analogy.
But you don't really have to make an analogy when you have the actual object that's in the story already.
Yeah.
Like literally we're in a roller coaster that has a restraint that could open at any time. We don't really have to have an analogy. We can just explain how freaked out we were because-
What makes you think I don't agree?
I was super freaked out and I noticed it was we were in a flying motion and my hair is a lot longer than normal. I cut it, but it's still long, right? Yeah. And so the first thing I noticed is when we started flying, it all just covered my eyes. It just all went straight down over my eyes.
That may be a good thing.
I couldn't see anything and my arms were locked in. I didn't want
to. You didn't want to touch your hair because that's not going to save you.
Right. But the whole time I was thinking.
It's tough for you not to touch your hair.
Because I started thinking.
Even in a life or death situation.
I started thinking things like, I weigh a lot compared to normal people. You know.
If any one of these front doors is going to open, it's going to
be mine. Right.
Well, I never thought about any of that. I was like, well, this is a crazy cool experience.
It was a great ride.
I focus on my breathing so I don't get a headache. But then Morgan was riding this with us and Stevie, and he said he was white knuckling that thing the whole time because he said if it did hinge open, he was dead set on dangling
that would have never
by
worked.
His arms as long as it took. But as fast as we were going, on a wing and a prayer, brother.
I mean, how quickly would they, if that one of those things opened, I wonder how quickly the roller coaster would stop. Somebody would have to see it. Or maybe there's like a sensor that sends a message back. I don't know. I don't like to think about it.
Do you remember our sound guy, Ben was telling me this right when we got to the park. Another thing I had to compartmentalize, Rich, our sound guy on some stuff.
A number of things.
Well, he used to work at Six Flags and one day we came in early and we were running one of the coasters and it launched off of the thing and landed in the parking lot and paralyzed a security guard.
The whole roller coaster?
One of the cars from the roller coaster did this. And
it hit the freaking guy who was just in the parking lot.
Yeah, and Ben told Eddie, and Eddie who grew up around here was like, yeah, I remember seeing that on the news. Rich was there. I'm not saying it was Rich's fault, but.
It happens. That's the thing is that these things fail, rides fail, and someone's gonna be on them when they fail. And it's like the chances that you're in a wreck on the way to the amusement park are way higher than something happening to you while you're on one of the rides. So if you just analyze the statistics, you really have nothing to fear, but you can't.
I was only fearing a heat stroke or dehydration. And it felt like enough of a survival situation that
it sounds like neither of us were amused. I mean, I
left thinking my lucky stars that I made it out of there alive.
Yeah, you're like, I don't have a headache, and I'm like, well, my back still feels good, and you know, my femurs didn't break.
I had a little bit of a headache.
Yeah, a little bit.
But I wasn't really thirsty, so it's cool. It's cool to spend the day somewhere. And then be able to say at the end of it, you know, I'm not that thirsty. You know, it's like, that's
a sign
success.
Of success.
Oh yeah, you must have had a good time. I'm not really thirsty. I don't care how long it takes. We got to give them the New York City
update.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, that's what I was going to move into. So we got back from a week, 8 days in New York City. You know, we had the Fallon appearance and the Ryan and Kelly appearance, which turned out to be the Kelly and Andy appearance. And,
yeah, I still want to meet Ryan Seacrest.
And then I was looking forward to that. But then it was,
Ryan, you're going to have to come to us.
It was a great meeting Andy.
Maybe we'll go back on the show.
But we And then we tacked a handful of days. We brought the whole crowd. So we had the wives and the children. And
all the children, maybe.
Yeah, so nine of us.
I kept threatening things like, we're not gonna bring you if you don't have a better attitude, or if you don't, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know, you hang things over there.
They all did pretty well.
I'm saying before we went.
And none of them had ever been in New York City. And
right.
We've been in New York City quite a bit, but we're always there for such a short period of time that we haven't done a lot of the touristy things, you know, Empire State Building, Statue of Liberty, and et cetera. Broadway show, like you had never seen a Broadway show, right? And I hadn't seen one in the 90s, but I hadn't seen one since.
So we were doing all that and taking the kids so that they could experience that for the first time. But I mean, starting with Fallon, I mean, they were really excited to be there. Now they were bummed because you have to be 16 to be in the audience.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So, I mean, Lily and Locke, we might could have snuck them in. They might could have passed for 16 in proper lighting, Tonight Show lighting.
Right.
Which we would have been fine with that, but the other kids would have been upset. So they just stayed in our dressing room. We each had a dressing room. And so we gave one to them, and then we just took the other one. And it being the third appearance on the Tonight Show, it says a lot that we were comfortable enough to make an appearance on a show that means a lot to us, because it's the Tonight Show. That's super cool. And to be invited back for a third time is awesome. So there's a lot of pressure that we put on ourselves that goes along with that, but it says a lot that we were comfortable enough to bring our entire entourage, meaning all of our immediate blood relatives, to like be running around the place. And 30 Rock is a cramped place. It's not like, oh, kids, you'll have plenty of room and no one's gonna notice. It's like, I was pretty, we had to be pretty confident that like, okay, we're gonna be comfortable bringing our kids in this environment, like putting them in this room and doing thing. So to
give you like an idea, I mean, this building was built a long time ago and a lot of entertainment has taken place in this building, but it's so interesting because you've got like, you know, you've got the Tonight Show on one floor and then you go up another floor and you've got Seth Meyers, you go up another floor and you've got SNL. Like it's all happening right there together, and I don't know if I've got the facts right on that, but basically that's how it is.
What floor is on what floor, but.
The really interesting thing.
And it feels kind of like an office building when you're backstage.
Like, it's a small hallway, and then everybody has like their dressing room, and we were just very, you know, because even here at our space in Burbank, it's like open, and there's like a skylight, because we're not in a tall office building, but it's like there, it's like, it was built for efficiency a long time ago. So it's all, and then all of a sudden you kind of go down this hallway and boom, you're in the room. You're on the set. You're and there's the audience.
It's like, how did this?
It's all very
tight.
How did
this room fit in here? Like the whole set, it's crazy.
But one of the things I did notice is people, a few of you commented on some of the videos and I saw this on social media as well. They're like, oh, you guys are at the Tonight Show for the third time in a year. You guys must be close personal friends with Jimmy now. He's bringing you back.
Yeah, which is true. I mean, it's cool. It's like, it's nice to now be friends with Jimmy. Before, it's like that morning we get up and it's like, hey guys, you wanna come play handball?
Yes, we play.
It's like, I've never played handball. Is it like racquetball, but just with your hand?
Right.
So, I didn't know until we showed up.
At Jimmy's personal handball court,
right
in his apartment, which is crazy,
awesome, and all we needed were hands. He had the balls,
and then he was like, later,
cracking jokes. Later, he's so funny.
If you guys want to come back later after the show, we can do. He says usually third time guest sleepover time.
Yes,
don't bring the kids, don't bring the wives.
Right, just so bring the sleeping bag.
It was a little bit awkward, but we had a sleepover. His wife and his kid were there, but. We didn't interact with them very much. We just played more handball.
Right.
Yeah.
And by handball, at this point, we still mean handball.
And what I'm really saying is that this is all a lie. We didn't do any of this.
I mean, Jimmy is nice enough to, he comes backstage while we're getting ready and he like says, hey guys, welcome back. Thanks for coming back. And we're like, we're so glad to be back. This is awesome.
Yeah.
There's no mention of handball.
Yeah.
It's just like, we're grateful to be here.
Yeah.
And he's very gracious and seems happy to have us. I mean, it's their invitation every time.
Well, think about it.
And then we do it.
this
then
this,
he leaves and then we come out and we do the show and then
this is a guy
we
who,
don't see him
who hosts a show that has different guests on it every single night, and I'm sure that he has actual personal close personal friends and plays handball with some of the guests that
how many people can you play handball with,
right? Really. And but no, so to,
how many hands
to
do
answer
you have?
That question,
first, just start with that. How many hands does Jimmy Fallon have?
Jimmy has been incredibly welcoming.
How many does he have?
He's got two hands.
Two.
We got two. We got six between
have
the six
four.
Of us.
Six between the three of us. Six of us.
But he's incredibly accommodating and nice and welcoming, and it's always great to see him. And we do have a legitimate conversation, in, you know, when we're not doing the show. But no, it's not like. He can't hang. He can't just hang out with people who come on a show. That's all he would ever do.
And the same goes for us. If you come on our show, we can't hang with you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I'm sorry. It's
but
like
I think the thing that I
we don't even play handball. I've never played it.
But we
and the first time I play it, it can't be with you.
Right. I think the thing that I was thinking was, you know, there was a certain level of nervousness the first time we went on. And I don't think any of this, if you go back and watch the clips or whatever, I don't think any of this really shows, but I was very nervous the first time. Mm. And this is nervousness that is before we come out. For I think for both of us, as soon as the curtain opens and we're on the couch, we're not nervous anymore. It's the days leading up to it and then the minutes right before the curtain opens and they call our name. Like, that's a very nerve-wracking thing. But I say the second time we went on, I was half as nervous. And then this time I was a third as nervous. It's like decreasing by a percentage every time.
Well, the next time we're not gonna be zero nervous.
No, we'll be
that's not healthy.
A fourth as nervous.
So it's
inversely proportional to
asymptotic.
Yeah. You'll never not be nervous, but my theory is that you go down at a rate of a fraction of the number of times you've been there.
But a function never touches its asymptote.
Exactly.
So you know there's always gonna be a certain low level of nervousness.
And there needs to be.
But I mean, we have that on our own show.
But
Good Mythical Morning,
I didn't like think like, you know, I wasn't like-
If we ever get back to doing that show.
Having like diarrhea, you know, like, you know, I think the first time we went on, I probably crapped like three or four times that day. You know, you begin to evacuate everything. Because your body's like, you're going into battle, sucker. Evacuate so you can be light on your feet. I probably took one crap that day.
Good.
This time, you know?
I didn't count, but I will next time. And so, but this time it's like Jimmy comes back and it's like, hey, our kids are here. Come in here and we got some photos with them. I even tweeted. Oh, I got a photo and I tweeted it. That's pretty good, man, for me.
Pretty good for you, Link.
I tweeted a photo that I took, but I was proud, man. I'm proud of those children of ours and wives. The wives weren't in it because the wives weren't in the picture because they were
in the audience.
They're over 16. They're over right. 18, which okay. is even more important. And they were out there in the audience.
Wow.
At the time that we took the picture with the Fallon. And then afterward, they did a behind the scenes. Hey, can you guys do a behind the scenes for our channel? We're like, absolutely. So let's do it with the kids. So like we go in there where the kids are, and if you haven't seen it, you should watch it. But the miraculous thing is that Lando was in the video. I can barely get him to be
in a picture.
In a picture.
He likes, he likes to take pictures, but he doesn't like to be in pictures. A lot of photographers are like that.
Yeah, he's like Banksy,
mm-hmm.
who's not a photographer.
No.
I know what he is.
But it's similar. You didn't have to explain that analogy. I get it.
It's like,
he wants you to see his art,
it's like
not
if you were
him.
In Banksy's house and it was like rocketing off of Earth to another place.
Yeah,
and,
don't go there.
But I asked, I was like, hey guys, Lando, you wanna be in a behind the scenes video? And he sits down and we're like all sitting, you know, we're sitting on the couch and they ask us like superlatives, who would get the award? And like we get the kids to say which of us should get certain awards, like most likely best gift giver and stuff like that. And Lando's sitting there the whole time in the video. And I'm thinking, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe. And so then after I was like, Lando, I'm super proud of you for being in the video. And he was like, I thought you said, do you want to watch a behind the scenes video?
That explains a lot.
So he said, because behind
there's a TV.
Behind the guy who was filming us, there was a television that showed, while they were backstage in our dressing room, they could watch the show being filmed. So they were able to watch it from backstage. And then he thought he was gonna sit down with us and watch behind the scenes.
He was just waiting for whatever was happening to be over.
So he could watch.
I think by the time he got into it, he knew what was happening and he was too late. He wasn't gonna show his butt.
He wasn't gonna walk out in the middle of the video. Who would do that?
Yeah, I did. And we don't have to bring up why I did, but I don't think you wanna relive that.
You can
watch the video. So Jesse was watching this, my wife was watching the video, and she's very self-conscious, very conscious about Shepherd's haircut and how it looked in the video. Here's why. So if you watch the video, cause she's like, you didn't fix Shepherd's hair. I'm like, nobody cares. He's an 8-year-old kid. But what happens is if you look at Shepherd's hair, it looks like, because it is, his hair is just like combed down and just cut straight across like a home cut. Now we paid for the haircut and I'm gonna tell you why it looks like this. So what she likes to do, because she doesn't want-
Is this explanation something that, did Jesse want you to explain this? Is this gonna,
on the show?
Is this gonna make things better? Yeah.
She's not gonna care. She likes us to, because of what happened with the haircut, which I'll explain, which is a funny story. She likes me to push it to the side so it looks somewhat stylish. So if you look at that video, it's just like, his hair is just like straight across, bangs like cut straight across his forehead.
Because he'd been in that room running around.
No, but here's what happened. So Jesse was taking Barbara to the vet. And so she had Barbara in the car with her, but Shepherd had to get a haircut. And so she takes Shepherd into the place to get a haircut. And she kind of tells him what to do. And then she's like, I'm gonna go to the car to be with the dog.
Can't leave a dog in the car. Or a car and a dog, that would be bad.
Unfortunately, what that means is that you've got an 8-year-old who is Shepherd, who you know is very vocal and he's gonna tell you what he thinks.
Oh, and what he wants.
Is now directing the haircut process.
Oh.
So what happened is while Jesse was like,
comb it all down and cut it straight across.
She was like, don't cut the front too short, is what she said. Because we wanna kind of be able to like swoop it to the side, right? But what happened is the barber or the stylist, I don't know what kind of place it was, basically Shepherd told Jesse, he was like, I just kept telling him, take more of the front because I don't like it to go in my eyes. So somehow Shepherd, an 8-year-old, was able to convince this-
Well, it is his hair.
Barber to basically just halfway up his forehead, just cut it straight across. And that's what his hair looks like now.
But it's your fault for not styling it before the behind the scenes video.
Yeah, well, she didn't really care. And I said, but it's cute, right? It looks like a bad haircut, but it's cute, it's on an 8-year-old. She doesn't really care, but I think the lesson learned is
Did people scrutinize his hair in the comments?
No, nobody noticed.
Well, it's funny.
Now that I talked about it, people will.
You know, well, that picture that I just bragged about tweeting, within 10 minutes, I got people talking about the stain on Lando's shirt. and then a kind mythical beast went so far as to Photoshop the stain off of his shirt. I'm like, and then repost the photo without the stain because enough people were talking about the stain on the shirt. First of all, it was a water stain. It was no stain at all. It was a moist spot that a 7-year-old, and then there were like people who had kids or experienced with kids chiming in the comments section and saying things like, listen, there are huge victories going on here in not even just having him in a picture or a video, which they didn't even appreciate, but just the fact that you got a kid all in one piece in public,
right,
with a little bit of stain is not an issue. But so again, this is the reason why we're a little calculated about putting our kids or loved ones on camera, because you can't help but pick apart the one thing. Like, there's this great photo and then you're talking about the stain. Now, I think most of it was just in good fun. It's like, yeah, no one was ripping him a new one because he was stained.
People just like to find something that they can point out.
But it was funny that they did. And then it was a funny choice to Photoshop it off. I think that person did it as a way to make fun of the people who were talking about it, not sincerely, I don't think.
Right.
I wasn't offended. I'm not offended now, but I do think it's a little funny that there was a whole sub thread about the stain on Lando's shirt.
Well, speaking of sub threads, for the Ryan and Kelly and Andy appearance. You know, that video was of us cooking the steak with the irons. That was posted on the Kelly and Ryan Facebook page, which then Jesse brought up the comments that the people who normally enjoy Kelly and Ryan's videos.
I love
videos,
it when this happens. I don't know what it is, but I love it when it happens.
But you can only imagine what the average viewer of Kelly and Ryan.
They thought we were highly intelligent, thoughtful human beings who know are culinary experts.
Exactly. So there were comments like, you know, essentially, who are these fools? Why did you have them on? This is not safe. They ruined an iron.
Four irons. People, oh, great.
People who are just not—
we ruined
not,
four irons.
Probably wouldn't enjoy our content. But then Jesse was pointing out the fact that a good number of mythical beasts had gone in and then defended us. And she was like, and they defended you in a very thoughtful way. It was like very tactful. And they were like, these are— I mean, people did say something like, you know, do you not have a sense of humor or whatever? But, you know, you don't have to feel the need to defend us, but I do appreciate it when you do. But the crowd wasn't necessarily ready for what we were gonna do, but the crowd in the studio was very responsive in the moment.
Well, we walked out there for a rehearsal and they were— live morning shows are just like, it's like chaos on camera, and then that everything backstage is like, what's happening? We had like the cooking thing over to the side, like a side stage, but on the main stage, the show wasn't happening. They were showing footage, and I think filming the audience, their reactions to it, my theory is to get more reactions or just to show them something while they were waiting. But we come out, and the producer's like saying, all right, we're gonna walk you through this thing. She tells me this, because I'm in the front of the line, you're walking behind me. And we walk out there, people are watching the show on a screen in front of the set, but then we come out and like there's people cheering for us. And then I turn around and I look at Rhett and he's got this panicked look on his face and he says, is this it? Like for a second you thought we were doing it.
Well, because
I knew it was a rehearsal, but we were in front of the whole crowd.
It was just strange because we had been backstage in this kitchen and we like went through the recipe and knew what we were gonna do. And then you were talking to the producer and I was kind of like, I was
thinking about your throat.
I was a little removed from that. No, thankfully at the time, my throat felt fine.
Okay.
Because it was the morning. That's when it feels good. And, but when we went out there yesterday, everybody
drinking some water.
Everybody was looking at us and we were very, very close to the, like the audience was extremely close to us. Like—
it was very intimate, yes.
And so they're all looking at us and I'm like, I thought it was a rehearsal, but no one told me it was a rehearsal. And now I'm like, are we gonna have to do this? And then she was like, oh, you're not doing this right now. But we did stay out there for 10 minutes or so, like going through what we were gonna do, and this is where we're gonna stand or whatever, and everybody's just kind of watching us do it. It was a little awkward.
I mean, it's like, you're a musician who has to go out and do a sound check in front of an audience, you can totally relate to this, but, and, because we've had that experience too. It's like having to do a sound check in front of people.
I don't like
having to rehearse
in
front of
people. I just don't like to do something.
I'm not saying
halfway before you do it all the way. Yeah, I don't even like—
it's in front of the people who are gonna see it all the way.
And also—
but you hate it more than I do.
And I purposely, like even when like we do like rehearsals on Buddy System, I purposely don't like to—
yeah, hold back.
Act in the way that I'm gonna act, which I found interesting when we worked with Michael McDonald, not the singer, the actor. And we were like giving him some direction in the rehearsal.
We rehearsed and then after we were walking away and we started to say something about his characterization.
He was like, I like to hold back on rehearsal. And I was like, yeah, me too.
And I was like, okay, sorry, I didn't mean to try to tell you. I didn't think that's what you were gonna do, but I just wanted you to know what, and then it was like, I'm gonna stop talking now.
But a lot of people have commented on the picture that Stevie posted to her Instagram of the three of us.
Uh-huh.
And people, at least one person was like, what is Rhett thinking with that look on his face? And the thing I'm thinking is that—
What described the look? Well, okay, what were you thinking?
It's just an uncomfortable, it looks a little constipated and I'm obviously not comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't like to be in front of people unless I'm actually in front of them and I'm doing something where I'm kind of like, I kind of know what my role is and I'm in control.
Like people watching you get a photo taken for another set of people is weird.
A whole audience of people watching me get a picture taken, that's the look I have. That's the look I have. You can see that on Stevie's Instagram. Maybe we'll put it in the video as well. But that's the look of a man who's a little uncomfortable.
It's the look of a man who's uncomfortable because he's posing for a photo while other people are watching that pose.
Yeah.
It was a success.
But yeah, I don't know if the winner will have been determined by the time this podcast goes. I don't know what the time that the but you can like retweet their tweet about us. Well, and that's how it goes.
The way that these things work, they get people from the internet to come on their show because people from the internet can get people to vote for stuff and like to churn social media.
It's all a big game.
And it's just how it works. So it's like, you know, you guys are extremely loyal and you love to support us. And we were very glad to be there. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm just saying that's just how it works. They want to get people churning comments and votes and stuff like that. It's good for their show. It's good for us. It's good. Everybody wins.
And as long
as you're not doing it out of sense of obligation, but you're doing it because it's fun to support us in their show.
And if we win, then $10,000 will be donated to a charity of our choice, which we've got a number of charities that we've partnered with in the past. I don't know if we've made a decision about which one we're going to do, but it'll be one that we've, you know, vetted and
I hope that didn't sound like I didn't care about the charity. I'm just saying that, like, let's be real. A lot of times, the first thing people think about is not, let's come up with something to give money to charities. Let's come up with something to like churn social media and let's also benefit charity as a separate thought. That's the best thought, but it may not be the first thought. And that's just how things work.
It's all about entertainment though, man. It's all about entertainment, right?
I have no clue. But then we shifted. Once we did those two things, we tried to be very disciplined to say,
personal time
to like, that was fun for the kids. They got to be in the audience for Ryan and Kelly. And they made an exception for our family to let them do that, even though there was an age limit there. And that was a cool experience for them. But then we had to go on the sightseeing tour. I think we went to the top of the Empire State Building. We rode the subways. We walked around. I know you love New York City because you gush about it every time we go. And like the first thing Rhett does every time we go is we're walking around. He's like, look, we're just walking around. Every time you turn a corner, something else.
I love it.
And
man,
I look down and there's like metal doors underneath stuff. I just want to go down in there.
Yeah,
and look up there. It's like people living up there and windows. And it's just like a kid in a candy shop. And a bull in a china shop together.
I didn't break anything.
Well, who knows?
No, but I do love it. It is my favorite city in the world.
So the kids experienced that.
But I'm not saying I'd rather live there than Los Angeles, but it's my favorite city to visit. I absolutely love it. I do love the fact that—
It's like walking around in an exciting gift shop.
I just love how every single step you take—
Riding a bull.
There's something else that somebody is doing that's just notable. It might be somebody's acting crazy, somebody's off their rocker.
Somebody's having sexual intercourse in an alleyway.
I saw that.
I seriously saw that
this time. And I was walking with my son when it happened, but I did not point it out to him.
It's like the Wild West or something? What? Where were you walking?
Well, this is another interesting thing about this trip is that Locke, you know, has moved on from diving to basketball and he's very serious about basketball. And he was he's trying out for his school team. So he's like, he was like, Dad, I can't have 7 days where I don't play basketball. So we got him a basketball while we were out there. And he went to like the public courts, like the street ball courts on the Lower East Side, which, you know, it's not like real street ball there, but it was pretty street. And
were streets nearby.
He went like four times and played like real pickup basketball with like real city dudes. We were very happy to welcome him. And we actually let him walk out there by himself a couple of times. Like he was like, I'm gonna go early in the morning, is it okay? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, Dad, I did like a crime analysis of this part of the city. Like, you know my son.
What?
Yeah, he's like, Dad.
No, I'll take that at face value.
Yeah, he's like, it's actually much safer here than it would be in downtown Los Angeles. Like he's got all-
Because he really wanted to go, so he had some data.
Yeah, but one time I went down there with him and then walked back. And that was when I passed the people having a transaction of some sort in the alley. And you know, it took me a second to figure out what was going on. At first I looked over and I was like, did that girl lose something and that guy's helping her? No, 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 No.
How far away? Could you have thrown a basketball and broke it up?
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't know if I've got that good of aim, but 30 yards. But when I realized they weren't—
hit the right spot.
They weren't looking for a lost item. They were finding love. I just—
scurried on.
I did a double take because you don't get to see that every day.
Was this in daylight?
Oh yeah, it was in daylight.
What on earth?
But it was down an alley on a stoop in the alley.
I'm sorry that I brought this up.
And it was not a good scene. You know what I'm saying? It didn't seem like a romantic moment. It seemed like a transactional moment.
Oh.
And I didn't dwell on it very long. I hadn't thought about it again until you brought it up. But I just knew that this is the thing.
Are you a compartmentalist?
My instinct was to turn to the guy that I'm with and be like, dude, check that out. But I realized dude was my 13-year-old son. I was like, yeah, I probably shouldn't point that out to him. He doesn't need to see that yet. So I told you about it when I got
and I brought it up here.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we roll the footage for the video viewing.
No. I did video the whole thing.
No, you didn't.
But I love the city, and I was having the best time.
Until
now, I was—
Can I say my highlight?
Worried about my throat the whole time, but I was having the best time other than that.
My highlight, I think being with the family and seeing these things, like we don't go on sightseeing tours a lot, but like all of that, we did a food tour one day, ate a lot of food.
Yeah.
What you saw, like Bob Dylan's house and where he first performed and where Jimi Hendrix first performed.
Awesome.
It's like
Cafe Wah, and
a lot of food. That was great. But just experiencing that, you know, with my family and with your family, like that, I mean, that takes the cake. That's the biggest thing. But if there's one like small highlight, it was actually, we went to the American Museum of Natural History right on the edge of Central Park, Neil deGrasse Tyson's observatory, planetarium. I'm saying it's his, but he's like the, I don't know, he's the guy.
He's the public face of it.
We saw like a cool planetarium movie.
I tweeted about that, The Dark Universe. I said it was very moving.
And then we come right outside and we go to Shake Shack and get burgers and shakes, and they're just, it's like, it's in LA now, and I've had it here, and it is amazing, but it was just like to have it there in—
We definitively determined that
it's both of our favorite burgers.
Yeah, well, everybody
was like,
agree
on something.
This is the best burger. The Shake Shack has the best burger.
But I got burned in my experience.
Metaphorically?
Like, literally. I burnt my mouth on a crinkle cut fry. The roof of my mouth, because I waited a long time for that that burger and that fry, and I think it was the fry that did it.
You did a pre-fry. You reached in the bag when you had the bag.
I got it. And then I burnt the roof of my mouth, and then I did something that I learned you should never do. Burn the roof of your mouth, and then immediately start sucking down a shake. And I applied vacuum pressure. And the end of the straw just so happened to be at the place where I hadn't yet realized it, I had burnt the roof of my mouth with the crinkle cut fry.
But typically that would be a good treatment though, a cold liquid like that.
And maybe that's what I was instinctively doing. But creating the vacuum to get this thick beverage out of the straw, I'm talking about the milkshake here. It made the burn bubble up.
Oh gosh.
And it made it hurt bad the next day. It really didn't take full form until the next day.
I was like, man, this is not just a burn while you're eating the burger.
The whole time I'm eating it, I'm like, I'm sucking down this shake, and like every time I'm unknowingly making the burn worse. Like I'm making the roof of my mouth like very tender and very bubbly. Like three distinct bubbles where I was like.
From one fry?
From the shake after the one fry, yeah. The burn then got. And just now, as of last night, I can eat normally again. I mean, we're talking 5 days of like having to eat on the right side of the roof of my mouth. You know how hard it is to keep food on one side of the roof of your mouth? Huh, it's real hard. I had to do that, man. But that doesn't denigrate the fact that that burger and that And it was a vanilla shake. I didn't even get the peanut butter shake.
You went plain.
Well, I've gotten the peanut butter shake here in Glendale, at the Glendale location, and it was lacking. I'm being real here. Oh. But the vanilla shake.
I haven't been there, and I don't.
It's amazing.
I don't do the shakes anymore.
It was blister-inducing heaven.
And but the burger was just
so good.
You know, here's what I said, because I try not to eat. I try to eat healthy. I did not eat healthy while we were in New York. I just ate whatever I wanted to, and I think I'm suffering because of it. But I was like, I'm not going to go back and just eat Shake Shack all the time in Glendale. I can't do that.
No,
it's going to be the special. It's going to be a special New York
special. But we know it's in Glendale.
But I was like,
we can go there if we have to.
The bun.
Oh gosh.
The burger, which you know, the bun and the burger are the two. The condiments are, you know, that's up to you. But the thing that the restaurant is really making a choice for you is the way they do their bun, and they like it's like a buttered toasted bun, and the burger is just unbelievable.
We were literally sitting. We're sitting here. We went on this big long trip, days and days of like sightseeing, and we're sitting here like going on and on about a burger.
Yeah,
it's that good, and they're not even paying us.
Yeah,
but we're gonna send them a bill.
Yeah, can you do that? Can you do an ad for somebody then send them a bill?
We're gonna try.
Shake Shack, you'll be getting a bill from Mythical Entertainment.
The Linkster, the Redster.
At least $100.
At least $100.
Yeah, triple digits for
we
that
could buy handballs with that kind of money. How much does a handball cost?
Well, a good handball run you $50. I mean, a good one.
You could get two.
Get two handballs. One for you, one for me.
Well, you only need one at a time, but if we lose
it's a backup ball.
Can you lose a handball? It's an enclosed room.
Yeah, but if you got like a drain without a top on it.
Don't have a handball court with a drain or crack the door.
No, you need a drain because you got to spray it down after a really intense game.
And then I can't not talk about the Lion King.
We'll talk about it. Are they gonna pay us as well?
Yeah, we're gonna send them a bill on the Lion King. Disney, Disney's getting a bill because we talked about how great the Lion King was. I'm sorry for yelling. We need to like put a little beep in retrospect that like people will know, Mythical Beast will know. Link's about to yell. That beep means like hold the earphones or the earbuds, pull them out.
I think you'll be fine. Compression, man.
Compress it down. It didn't even hurt him.
No.
I'm trying to be sensitive. I don't want to turn anybody away because we're getting that Disney money.
Now,
the Lion King.
Now, I think we talked a little bit about this, but I
didn't talk about it enough.
I think you and me both.
Us.
Teared up very early on in The Lion King.
I can tear up right now thinking about it. Listen.
I teared up.
The opening vocal was amazing. I mean, it's like you got a character which turned out to be
a baboon.
We didn't know
that until the very end.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't make any.
Well, that singing woman is incredible.
You know what, I compartmentalized the movie The Lion King from this experience, and they were totally separate. So I wasn't trying to figure out now.
Well, it's been a while since I've seen the baboon who
holds up the baby?
We should have known it because she held up Simba at the very beginning.
But even before that, she bust out singing.
Unbelievable.
And the voice was just amazing. And there was a guy off to the side singing too, and the two of them were singing in another language.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter what they were saying.
But like as the animals come in.
It was two giraffes. It was a person, giraffe.
Well, I mean, I think most people do have some idea of how the Lion King musical works. But
we're
like,
behind on this one.
This is
not new.
Did you not know that that's how it was going to be, like these puppets and stuff?
I did know.
I'd seen pictures. But like when the cheetah girl.
Well, you have to explain it. I don't care if people have seen it. It's one person on stilts.
Well, that's your giraffe, yeah.
That is the giraffe,
but like,
yes. It's not the cheetah. I know which one was the cheetah.
Yeah, yeah, no, but I'm saying—
I don't think the cheetah had long legs and a long neck. I know that's a giraffe.
No, but I'm saying that the cheetah, all of it—
Cheetah was my favorite.
All of it made me tear up. I teared up multiple times throughout it.
When the giraffes walked out and they were singing the song, I started crying. And then a cheetah comes out and it's the back leg—
The cheetah was so graceful.
The back leg, it's a woman. whose legs are the back legs of a cheetah.
And then she's puppeteering the front legs and her head is connected to the cheetah's head. And when she moves her head, the cheetah's head moves. And it was like
I've never liked puppets. I've been anti-puppet.
But now you're pro-puppet.
I'm so pro-puppet now.
Lion King has made you pro-puppet.
These are special puppets. These aren't just like
normal
puppets.
You're pro-special puppet, not pro-normal puppet.
I'm pro-special puppet. I'm pro African savannah special Lion King.
I think you're pro puppet that has a person attached to puppet that you can see them puppeteering in a very—
Well, they could have done costumes. So, and it would have been like Disney on Ice.
Does that mean you're into ventriloquist now?
Yes.
No, definitely not. Because it was very different. Although, they didn't do that. Bird was very much ventriloquist.
The bird was a ventriloquist. And I almost bought the bird.
It was my least favorite.
I thought the bird was one of the best things.
No. I love the bird's character. I love what the bird said.
You weren't comfortable with the ventriloquy.
It was a less creative approach, but then I started thinking, what else could you do with a bird? They did what they had to do.
You're thinking all this.
Yeah, I'm also thinking.
I'm just thinking they could have been dressed up as animals, but instead they did this weird thing that's never been done before when it's like, you see the animal, but then you see the person and you can focus on the person.
Or the animal.
Or the animal.
And you make a choice.
And you can constantly be choosing to appreciate the puppeteering or just the performance of the person.
Right.
And the way that they were built, I mean, it was like inspiring.
Yeah.
It was those creative choices of how they said, we're not gonna do a costume and we're not gonna do puppets. We're gonna do both and we're not gonna do either. And it's gonna be something totally new and it's gonna make people be pro puppet.
Yeah, we become pro puppet. So that was a highlight. That was a highlight.
And
for
I was
both
literally
of us.
Tearing up when it was so great.
But I will say, I will say in an effort to wrap things up here, the next to last day we were walking on the High Line, again another great experience. Met some friends from LA out there who were also in New York and we walked the High Line.
The High Line is the railroad that is suspended kind of next to the river.
It's the west side on the Hudson.
And then they were bringing like freight and all this stuff on the railway, which was above where everyone walked around.
But
and
now
lived
it's been
their
restored
lives.
And turned into like a place where people can walk. And
it's almost like a nature parkway.
That then
walkway.
Goes like through the city and like there's people's apartments and buildings right up on it. Super cool.
Yeah. Kind of long though.
But yeah, I was walking next to you and you're like, well, I'm ready to go home. Like I'm sitting, you know.
And the moment I said it, I knew that I shouldn't have said it to you.
Well, cause you know, we represent very opposite ends of the spectrum, right? So I'm doing something that I know is completely irrational, right? This is totally irrational. When I'm walking on the High Line, I'm seeing these apartments and I'm like, I gotta move here one day. Like that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, we need to do like a year. We need to like, well, how much is one of those apartments to rent for a year? We should just come here for a year just to spend a year in the city. Like
your mind's racing a million places. You're in the future and you're living there.
And then like, of course.
This will be your daily commute.
No. And my son is exactly the same way. By the end of the trip, he's going to NYU to play back. You know, that's how we think. We've always been that way. It's like you go into a situation and then you immediately like put yourself in it. And Jessie's the same way. She's like, she gladly participates in that conversation. So I'm like, my mind is up here. I'm in the future. I'm thinking about this. I turn to you and you're like, well, I'm ready to go home.
And I wish I had the ability to think a little bit more out of my circumstances. But I think that by that point in the trip,
you're ready to go
home. The logistics of everything kind of started to weigh on me. Like I'm really starting to understand how sensitive I am to space, to personal space, and to, by this point in the trip, like my being in such close proximity to my family, my kids and the problems. I mean, Lando fell over and skinned his knee, and then we're having this moment, and we're like searching for a Band-Aid, and we're trying to like, okay, just, it's okay, just keep it down. You're falling apart here. And then the buildings start to close in on me.
But they weren't actually.
We weren't moving, but
yeah.
I recognize that. But
it felt that way.
And then it's just like, you know, my own space. And it's not about, yeah, maybe it's a little bit about comfort and about things that we've explored a lot on this show. But it wasn't just that, so it would be an oversimplification to say, well, in this moment, I couldn't appreciate where I was and how amazing it was and anything like that. But it was also an accumulation of many days of another world pressing in on me and having the
kids there. Whew. It does get, you know,
I was ready to get back.
Yeah, I get, you know, I would not do well. I'd have to have a serious personality adjustment to be a stay-at-home dad. Like that would be a difficult thing for me to do. Because just-
But for me, I'm not putting it all on the kids. It's no. Like it was everything. It was the environment and just sheer mass of people. Like we asked Lincoln, like, what do you think about New York City? He was like, it's a lot of people. and he was like feeling, there's a lot of people really close up.
Yeah, I did ask Lincoln the second night we were walking around. I'm like, what do you think about this place? He's like, meh.
Yeah, it's not for everybody.
I love
to visit.
But the kids,
I don't think I love to visit anywhere too long.
But the kids have kids have kid needs, and there are sometimes you're just like, man, I just like if we could just go, and we did this once, just go out on a date, but you know, with our wives and Stevie and Cassie, and that was a great night. But when I think about some unrealistic scenario when I think about being there, I'm like, oh, this is like, yeah, the kids are on their own now. The kids are in college or the kids are, have their own careers, and we just go and spend a summer in the city.
But in fairness, every time I've left to bring it back to the amusement park for today, every time I've left an amusement park, I've been like, I'm ready to go home. And I definitely-
Well, I feel that.
I definitely thought it was like, man, wrangling these kids and keeping them all happy and like alive in this survival situation that is an amusement park, boy, that really takes it out of you. And then actually they weren't there today. And I kind of felt the same. So I'm like, it's a little bit of a wake up call.
Right, it's not about the kids.
This is a little bit, maybe it's me, or maybe it's just the amusement park.
But I was there was a special feeling that I had when I got back home and I was like, this is relaxing, this is quiet.
I know there's mountains there, but I can't see it through the smog. That's
comforting.
Something to that.
But yeah, I was glad to be back and I was like, I'm glad we live here. I'm not saying I wanna live in New York City.
Well, you wanna live everywhere, just be real.
I wanna live wherever I go. I put myself there and I'm like, how could I live here?
But no one summers in New York City.
Yeah.
That's what they always tell you, you summer somewhere else.
Yeah, it's too hot.
Wow. Thanks for hanging with us as it's just a lot of catch up. You know, I like to process what we've been through. So this episode has felt like a scrapbook. We just had a scrapbooking session.
We journaled. We journaled verbally.
I scrapbooked.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Same thing, we made memories. We cataloged memories in a way that, you would like to scrapbook about, like to journal about, but we didn't, and now that we have a record, a time capsule, if you will, of our experience in New York and at the amusement park and at
everything
the doctor's
else.
Office. We've recorded history, that's what we've done.
And with a few tweaks, and if we tell the story a few more times, we will have played handball with Jimmy Fallon.
That's the beauty of recording it now, because every time you reaccess a memory, you change it.
Yeah.
But then we've got a record.
Now we can't do it actually. Right. We actually made it worse. So we could have played handball with Jimmy Fallon if we wouldn't have done this.
We locked it in.
Ugh. Well.
Thanks for joining us. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that we'll be back again next week. There's a small chance that I'm gonna not be able to speak and you're gonna be talking and I'll be making motions next week. I don't know, maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't.
Let's find out.
We'll leave our options open.
Yeah.
Tune back in to find out.
I'll talk at you next week, I can guarantee that. Love you.